Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Right now, we're going to talk golf. Alan Shipnuck joins us. He's covered the game for a long, long time. And now a partner at the Fire Pit Collective. Author of 6 books. Alan, good to visit with you. Thanks so much for joining us. I really do appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for your patience. I know I've been elusive, but I'm happy we made this happen.
No, and I feel like a complete jerk for just, you know, hounding you and begging you to come on, and I'm glad it really worked out. I know you had quite a week at Torrey Pines in San Diego for the U.S. Open, and what a finish for Jon Rahm. A great performance, considering what happened at the Memorial with COVID-19. I mean, it's almost a storyline you can't make up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he showed so much class and perspective when he had to withdraw at the Memorial, you know, with a 6-shot lead. And, you know, it's funny, Rahm said during the week at Torrey Pines that he believed in karma. And so I think the golf gods were listening. But, you know, he certainly went out there and earned it. I mean, to birdie 17 and 18 on Sunday to win the U.S. Open, that's legendary stuff. And he just absolutely played a beautiful round of golf. And every other big name that was in the hunt just retreated in some in spectacular fashion, like Bryson, some like Louis, just the wrong swing at the wrong time, as he did on the 71st hole. But Rahm just went out there and snatched that trophy. It was a big time performance, and I think we can all agree there's more in his future. I mean, he's just top to bottom. He has no weaknesses in his golf game, and he's clearly not afraid of the moment. And he's a special player, and I was also impressed just afterwards, you know, the heartfelt comments and the amount of soul he kind of displayed in victory. He was really, really impressive kid at age 26. So it's going to be fun to see where he goes from here.
Yeah, and it seems like he's been around a lot longer than that. You know, so you think about him being 26 years old. He had a 6-shot lead, had to withdraw from the Memorial by rule because of the positive COVID-19 test. And you know, for a lot of players, that it would take him a while to just recover from that. And for him, on this huge stage, Torrey Pines, U.S. Open, to play the way he did on a really tough golf course is super impressive. And, you know, you hear these terms, sky's the limit, how many majors is this guy going to win? But he just seems to have, you know, some intangibles that maybe other players that have won majors young don't have. It's kind of hard to explain, but I got a feeling about this guy. What he said about Seve was cool. I mean, he really seems to have it all figured out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, he has a great mentor in Phil Mickelson. I mean, there's talked about to be a young player with great expectations. I mean, very few people can understand it the way Phil has and the way he's navigated public life and ups and downs and all that. And so, you know, they really have embraced that relationship. You know, literally, Rahm was there to greet Phil at the PGA Championship when he walked off the last green, and Phil returned the favor at Torrey Pines. I mean, there's a real kinship there, so that certainly serves him well. And, you know, Rahm, he just had a kid. Everything has life by the tail right now. And there's also a lot of players, when they win one major, it's sort of like they got to the mountaintop and they're satisfied, and that's the crowning moment of their career. But Rahm doesn't think that way. I mean, he knows he has a chance to be a player of historical importance. And so he just kicked down the door, but by no means is he just going to be like, okay, now I can coast for a couple of years. And I think he's greedy. He wants a lot of these big trophies, and that's what you want. I mean, when you can marry talent and desire and work ethic, that's a pretty formidable combination.
Alan Shipnuck joining us. I've got to ask before we get into Torrey Pines and some of the other storylines coming out of the U.S. Open. Tell us about the Fire Pit Collective. What's it all about? I mean, kind of a big leap for you. You've been writing about the game and time with Golf Magazine and Sports Illustrated and all of that. What's it all about, Alan?
Well, it's really just a chance to be my own boss and have my own platform. You know, I kind of co-founded it with Matt Janella, who probably a lot of your listeners know from his work at Golf Channel and Golf Digest before that. And I was, as you said, I was at SI and Golf Magazine. I mean, between Matt and I, we've been at practically every legacy golf media company, and they're just doing it wrong in a lot of ways. And the business model's flawed, and the editorial integrity's been lost. And so we just created our own media company, and the interest from readers, but also advertisers and sponsors and investors has been tremendous. We've actually hired out a whole staff of really talented contributors and technicians and videographers and editors. And so, I mean, we're really excited. I mean, we feel like we're going to take, we've seen all the mistakes made by all our bosses through the years, and we've learned from that. And we're just doing things our own way. But, you know, it just, the fire pit is kind of a metaphor. You know, if you go to Banda Dunes, you go to Pinehurst or any of these, you know, Pebble Beach, there's always a great fire pit where the golfers gather and tell their stories. And that's really what it's all about for us. We don't want to be influencers. We just want to be storytellers and bring kind of, you know, Matt and I and the people that we've brought on are more kind of classically trained journalists. And so just really do cool, elegant storytelling without any interference from corporate overlords or anything like that. So we're super excited. We had a great week around the U.S. Open. A couple of our features got picked up by Golf Channel, NBC, and it was really the early months, but we feel like we're kind of putting together something kind of special.
Well, it's good for you, and I'm certainly a big fan and enjoy all your work around the game of golf. One of my favorite things about the U.S. Open is the fretting about the course in the layout year in and year out. Is the course up to U.S. Open standards? Did they set it up properly? Is it too tough? Is it unfair? I love that part of the U.S. Open, and here's Torrey Pines kind of a muni, if you will. I mean, it's a great golf course, two U.S. Opens. They have the Farmers Insurance Open there every year. I mean, everybody's familiar with Torrey Pines. How did it stack up? Is it a worthy U.S. Open venue? Your thoughts on Torrey Pines?
Well, the bottom line is there's been two U.S. Opens at Torrey Pines, and they both have been epic. I mean, that's all you want. You know, it's an incredible piece of ground. Anyone who's watched telecasts can see that with the cliffs and the ocean and all that. The design is kind of a relic of the old days. You know, golf course architecture has evolved so much in kind of this more natural, strategic kind of design principle. Torrey is more man-made and penal. You know, it's not the most exciting design. I mean. A lot of championship golf courses, you get to the tee, and there's a lot of decisions to make. What club you want to hit, how you want to attack the hole, what is the cost-benefit analysis that goes into that, and that's really cool. That makes it interesting to watch. Torrey is not that way. It's basically every hole, there's a bunker down the left side and a bunker down the right side, and you just have to hit it right in between those bunkers. And then you get up to your ball, if you do that successfully, and there's a bunker left and there's a bunker right of the green. You just have to hit it onto the green. And so it doesn't have a lot of pizzazz, but it's a very old-school examination for a U.S. Open. You have to hit the ball precisely, and if you do, you have a chance to win the U.S. Open. And so there's, you know, is it Shinnecock Hills? No. Or some of these other greats, you know, Oakmont, some of these old citadels that are traditional U.S. Open venues that are really interesting and thought-provoking and have all incredibly cool design features. That's not Torrey. It's really a throwback. You know, can you just play U.S. Open golf? And And as a change of pace, it's great. I don't think we'd want to go there every 5 years, but every 13 or 14, sure. Gives a chance to relive, you know, what's now two absolutely iconic putts. Tiger in 2008 and John Rahm 13 years later on the same hole location in the same green. So all the complaining about Torrey, it gets to be a bit much. I mean, it is what it is. And I think it's an important statement for the USGA to keep going to a true municipal golf course. Cause Pebble Beach and Pinehurst are public, but, you know, I can't afford to play there. Probably most of your listeners can't. I mean, the prices are ridiculous. And so, you know, if you live in the city of San Diego, you can play Torrey Pines for like $50. You know, it's really a people's golf course. And for our national championship, it's an important statement that we're going to go to a course like that at least occasionally. So, you know, there was a school of thought that if Rocco Mediate had won in 2008, the U.S. Open would never have gone back to Torrey Pines because of the Tiger and because of the way it played out. It guaranteed that Torrey would get another chance. And I think probably you can say the same thing again. The way this one played out, John Rahm's putt, all of it, they're going back. Just a question of when. And the snobby golf course architect wonks, it'll complain about it, but I think it'll still serve up a great tournament and have two times in a row now.
I wanted to get your thoughts, speaking of the U.S. Open course setups, et cetera, Mike Davis, the era ends at the USGA, and he's been a lightning rod figure, I think, among a lot of golf fans. What about his era at the USGA? You know, they paid a tribute to him at the end of the tournament, at the end of the championship. What about Mike Davis, Alan?
Well, I mean, Mike Davis is one of the nicest human beings on the planet. I have a lot of affection for him personally, but it's a very mixed bag when you look at his legacy. I mean, there was a series of screw-ups with the national championship setup that he oversaw. You know, Shinnecock twice, the greens at Chambers Bay, the greens at Pebble in 2010. I mean, you can go down the list, Marion pin positions, like, he got a lot of things wrong, and that reflects on Davis. But to me, the most damning thing is the way that the USGA has just been asleep at the wheel as golf has gone from this mix of power and finesse to almost purely a game about speed and distance. And, you know, the United States Golf Association is in charge of regulating the sport and the equipment, and they just have flat out have not been up to the task. And, you know, the athletes get bigger and stronger in every sport, but they play defense against each other, and that sort of cancels it out. So, you know, if like Ben Simmons would make Bob Cousy look absolutely ridiculous, right? It's just a complete mismatch athletically. But, you know, Ben Simmons is playing against other guys now who are 6'8" and just as quick. And so there's a level of the playing field. But golf, you have these modern athletes who are totally optimized in every way. But the playing field dates to the 19th century. It's just not a fair fight. And so, you know, that's an indictment of Davis's leadership or lack thereof. But, you know, I financially, the USGA is in a much better position than it ever has been. You know, that gives them the ability to do a lot of things, supporting the game at the grassroots level. And they've done a lot of important things on water conservation and a lot of stuff that doesn't get talked about, but really is important. So I would give Davis probably a C+, or maybe a C. He didn't fail, but he certainly didn't set the curve either. I'm a big fan of Mike Wan, the guy who's coming in as his successor after, you know, a blockbuster career as a commissioner of the LPGA. And I think Wan is a real forward thinker, and I believe that he will be an agent of change, and he's really going to help the USGA. So Davis did some important things that I think will help Juan succeed, but it's definitely a mixed bag when you look at his entire tenure.
Want to look forward a little bit. Open Championship across the pond after a year off due to the pandemic. The Open is back. As much as I enjoyed here in the Central Time Zone, primetime golf coverage Saturday and Sunday in the final round. It's great. I also like getting up early on Saturday and Sunday and watching, you know, the third round and the final round of the Open across the pond. It's cool. It's a great tradition, and welcome back. It's the oldest and still among the majors. Definitely right up there as far as enjoyable golf, and it's a unique event. They're not as married to par as the U.S. Open. The style of play is foreign to many of us here in the States.
Yeah, the Open's great. Again, though, you talk about courses that have been overwhelmed by the modern game. I mean, I'm worried about next year at St. Andrews. If the wind doesn't really blow, there's going to be multiple 59s, and the winning score could be 30 under. I mean, that course is just utterly defenseless unless it's blowing 20 miles an hour. So
right.
there's some fretting about that. But you're right, Lynx golf is really fun to watch, and it is a different kind of challenge, and the elements do loom large. And it was a shame that the old boys of the RNA kind of cut and run and didn't even try and put the Open on last year. But I get it. It was logistically a huge challenge to try and make it work in the early months of COVID. But we certainly missed it, and I hope to be there. You know, right now the UK still has a 10-day quarantine. For anyone come from the U.S., they're going to reassess on June 24th. And if the tiers change, which they could, given our vaccination rate and everything else, and they drop the quarantine, I'll be there for sure. But, it's a big one. And, you know, this golf season, there's been a lot of, you know, parity. There hasn't really been a dominant player, a dominant storyline, which is fun in its own way. But, the Open is the last major of the year. Will go a long way towards defining things. So it's going to be a great show. As you said, we all missed it, and we're happy it's back.
Yeah, for sure. Getting up early and watching the Open. A couple of quick hits before we let you go.
I'm in Pacific time. You're not talking about getting up early? Come on. It's like,
yeah.
I set my alarm at 4 o'clock if I'm not there.
Yeah, for sure. Here in the Central time zone, there's a little bit of balance.
I'm talking about early. Come on.
Well, yeah, you guys have to get up really early to watch the noon game here in the Central Time Zone, 10 a.m. for early football on a Sunday. That's crazy.
Yeah.
When I was visiting my daughter when she went to school at U of A in Tucson, it was hard to get used to that when I was out there visiting. It's like, when am I supposed to watch stuff out here? I don't know what to do. Alan, I wanted to bring up a couple of quick hits before we let you go. Number one, Rory. He fades on Sunday. What's the story with Rory McIlroy? The galleries seem to love this guy, are rooting for the guy, and he did win at Quail Hollow, a good win at the Wells Fargo. I mean, that regular tour event, that's a good one, good golf course. But what's going on with Rory? Is he going to get another major? It's kind of crazy what's going on between his ears.
Yeah, he doesn't need a swing coach. He's an exorcism. I mean, there's just his good golf is still, you know, maybe there's no one in the world that's better. Maybe it's Dustin Johnson, but maybe it's John Rahm. But it's a small number of guys. But he just gets in his own way. Whether he's nervous or he wants it too much or he's trying too hard, whatever it is, it's just he's completely mental. And you know, he has this bad habit of shooting 75 in the first round of a major, which is just almost like stage fright. And then he managed to get off to a decent start at Torrey. He was right there. You know, made that big bending 35-footer on, the fifth hole, and all of a sudden he was one off the lead, and it's like, okay, you make a putt like that, it feels like the fates are aligning. But, he went bogey, double bogey in the middle of the back nine with the U.S. Open hanging in the balance.
Yeah.
I mean, you just can't make those mistakes. And it's unfathomable that he's now going on, you know, 7-plus years since his last major in what should be the prime of his career. You feel like he's just going to wake up and be four shots back on a Sunday and he'll go out and shoot 62 and he'll just win from the clubhouse. I mean, something like that is what it's going to take just to break this streak. I mean, just when he's in these dogfights, it's like he gets tight and there's no freedom to his swing and things just go sideways. So there's no explanation other than it's just completely mental, because he can go out and dominate at Quail Hollow, you know, 2019, a good way to field it at the Players' Championship. I mean, he's winning big-time tournaments on great golf courses, but the ones that really matter and will define his legacy and the ones that he wants the most, he absolutely just can't get it done. So, discouraging.
Alan, good to visit with you. Thanks so much for the time, and hopefully you can make it across pond for the Open. Take care.
All right, thanks for having me.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.